It's 6 o'clock on the dot. Welcome to WORT's local news for Tuesday, March 5th, 2024. I'm your host, Sean Bull.
And I'm your host, John K. Wilson. In tonight's news, Madison Alders are slated to meet tonight as they continue to look for solutions to the city's budgetary shortfall.
We head out into the field to answer your question, why is there a giant rat on Lake Street?
And in the second half of the show, we get into Greenbush neighborhoods past, present, and future, and take a closer look at a new admission at Dane County's Wildlife Center.
This is Sean Bull and John K. Wilson with your local news coming to you live from the WORT studios in beautiful downtown Madison. Here are tonight's headlines.
Two lawsuits that aim to remove former President Donald Trump from the 2024 ballots in Wisconsin were dismissed this week following a ruling from the U.S. Supreme Court. Yesterday, justices rejected an attempt to disqualify Trump from the primary ballot in Colorado over his role in the January 6th insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. That led courts in Wisconsin to drop similar efforts to block Trump from ballots here, Wisconsin Public Radio reports. One of the Wisconsin lawsuits was filed in January by Kirk Bangstad, a liberal activist and owner of Minocqua Brewing Company. The other was filed last year by John Anthony Castro, a long-shot Republican candidate from Texas who filed similar suits across the country.
Here's your reminder that Wisconsin's 2024 presidential primary election is on April 2nd, and residents can register to vote anytime up until then. Fact-checkers at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel are emphasizing that point after a string of social media ads have appeared incorrectly, warning voters that the state's registration deadline is in mid-March. The ads on Facebook and Instagram are sponsored by Voto Latino, a nonprofit advocacy group that advocates for left-leaning policies, the newspaper reports. Recent ads have alerted voters that the deadline to register is, quote, rapidly approaching and, quote, less than 2 weeks away. But that's leaving out a big chunk of information. Wisconsinites have until March 13th to register online or by mail, but Wisconsin is a same-day registration state, which means voters can register in person at the polls on Election Day or during business hours at their clerk's office any day before that. Voto Latino did not respond to the Journal Sentinel's questions about the misleading ads.
Wisconsin's current congressional districts will stay in place for elections this fall. That's after the state Supreme Court declined to hear a challenge to the maps late last week, the Capital Times reports. The court's liberal majority tossed state-level assembly and Senate maps that heavily favored Republicans late last year. Following that decision, a liberal law firm asked justices to reopen a challenge to congressional district maps as well. But last Friday, the court issued a ruling that it would not consider that case. Election officials have said any new congressional maps would have to be in place by mid-March to give enough time to prepare for August primaries and the November general election. Wisconsin currently has 8 U.S. House districts with 6 seats held by Republicans and 2 held by Democrats.
State Democrats say they plan to compete for the Northeast Wisconsin U.S. House seat currently held by Republican Representative Mike Gallagher, who is not seeking re-election. At least 3 Democrats are considering a run for the 8th District, according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. They include DePere doctor Kristen Lyerly, former journalist Kelly Peterson, and Navy veteran Alicia Saunders. It's a change in tactics for Democrats, who did not field a challenger against Gallagher in 2022 in the district that has been solidly Republican for the last decade. But party officials say they are confident they can make the race competitive this year. Lyerly, Peterson, and Saunders say they want to avoid a primary and are deciding among themselves who will run for the seat. The others may seek state assembly seats. Gallagher announced his retirement last month. That same day, Republican former state senator Roger Roth threw his hat in the ring. State Senator Andre Jacques has also said he is considering a run.
Governor Tony Evers has signed off on a Republican-backed plan to significantly expand the state's child care tax credit. The measure more than doubles the amount that filers can claim on their state taxes to defray spending on childcare, according to the Associated Press. During a signing ceremony last week, Evers said he was approving the change because, quote, the cost of childcare is too darn high. The bill was part of a Republican package of tax cuts that totaled $800 million, but Evers vetoed the rest of the proposed changes, including a wide expansion of income tax brackets.
Two UW-Madison students were physically assaulted on campus Sunday night, and university police are continuing to investigate, the Daily Cardinal reports. According to a notice from the UW Police Department, two students were walking near the intersection of Linden and Observatory Drives around 8:30 p.m. when two strangers approached them and struck them in the face and head. The assailants were reportedly part of a group of six men. The victims were able to walk away from the attack. Police did not indicate that any arrests have been made.
And those were your local news headlines. We turn now to two special guests here in the studio, Jess Miller and Jade Iseri Ramos, who want to tell you a little something about WORT's Winter Pledge Drive.
Hey, yeah, thanks. We have great news over in the station. Isn't that right, Jess?
Yes, that bell means good news here. Since we last spoke to you, we have had a very generous donation come through from an anonymous donor. Their favorite shows are too hard to list. There's just too many good shows for this WORT listener to pick any one favorite, but we sincerely thank you for your generous donation.
I feel that way. Sometimes I'm like, I have a lot of favorite shows on WORT. It depends on the day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, like our host said, my name is Jess Miller. I'm here with Jade Iseri Ramos, and we are in the midst of our Winter Pledge Drive here at WORT, coming at you to ask you to help support community radio and give a little bit today to make shows like our local news happen.
Yeah, you know, the local news show, you know, I might be a little bit biased because I've worked on the local news. I think it's the show that takes the most amount of work. And it's not just from, you know, one person or a couple people. This is a show that every day there's at least, you know, one reporter. There's Faye, who's the news producer. There's the feature contributors. There's the people who are reading the news. There's the engineer. There's just so much that goes on to making sure that you have the news and that it's something that is incredibly easy to digest. And, you know, we fact check and we make sure that what you're hearing is what's happening in Madison and that you have the facts. In that headline just there, we heard that, you know, there's some confusion about, you know, when you can vote. We are going to be the place that tells you that, you know, we are going to keep it very, you know, black and white and making sure that you have all the facts so that you can be an engaged citizen in this community.
Yeah, and I myself am a local news contributor here. I'm also a journalism student at UW-Madison, and I've found that WORT is just such a really valuable place to learn journalism and learn how to stay connected with the community that I'm a part of and how to serve that community. And that's something that I really wouldn't have gotten the opportunity to do outside of the classroom without WORT, which is why your pledges are so important. If you want to be like that anonymous donor that we shouted out at the beginning of this segment, you can call 608-256-2001 and make your pledge over the phone. Or you can visit us online. Our website is wortfm.org. That's wortfm.org. There's a big orange donate button in the top right corner of the page that you get to when you first go there. So you can make your pledge over the phone or online. You can do a one-time pledge, or you can spread it out over the course of several months. Either way, we would sincerely appreciate your help. We're looking for just a few more people to donate here in this hour, and everything helps.
Yeah, so, you know, make that donation, make it count for the news. Your dollars really stretch here. You know, we're able to buy equipment that is used by, you know, dozens of volunteers. We're able to, you know, really, really stretch your dollar to make sure that you are truly investing in the future of journalism here in Madison. And then, you know, our reporters go anywhere, right? We have folks who are at WPR. We have folks who are, you know, NPR. We have folks across the world, really, who are who got their start here at WORT. And you are truly investing your dollars into making sure that that happens. So again, phone number here is 608-256-2001, or go online, wortfm.org. We won't hark on the gifts too much, but if you go online, you can see the sort of things that we have to offer that will show you, you know, yes, a little patch or a hat or a sweatshirt, something just to thank you for donating to the station.
Yes, if the promise of community radio is not quite enough to get you to pick up the phone, there's a lot of really cool incentives that you can choose from if you make a donation. We'll talk about those a little bit more later on this hour. But like Jade was saying, your pledge dollars are not just going to support the news that you love to listen to. They're going to support the education of journalists and the promotion of excellent journalism here in the Madison community. So once again, that number to call is 608-256-2001, or visit us online at wortfm.org. We're looking for a few more people here in the next hour. We've got about 45 minutes left in our local news show, so please pick up the phone and we'll get back to our local news right now.
The Madison Common Council is at the beginning of a long, stressful budget process and a looming $27 million shortfall, and there's a range of paths the city leaders could prioritize, largely at the direction of the Common Council. Those options range from serious spending cuts to a referendum on the ballot in November. Another option before the council tonight is looking for a long-term solution. WORT news producer Faye Parks has the details.
Madison Alders are set to renew their budget discussions in tonight's meeting, a little less than a month after their first in-depth look. In mid-February, the city's finance department explained their projections for Madison's financial future. According to their math, the operating budget will have a $27 million shortfall in 2025 if left as is. Finance Director Dave Schmidtke outlined a few paths moving forward, broadly, to either cut the city's expenses or to increase the city's revenue. One of those revenue-raising options is a referendum this November that would ask voters if they'd agree to pay higher property taxes. Another option seeks to lobby the state legislature's approval for a local sales tax. The idea comes from the city's Equal Opportunities Commission, and Alder Imani Latimer Burris is the sponsor on the resolution.
I mean, I think we're at the point in the city where we've got to look at the impact on not just one group of people or in one situation. So I thought going to the Equal Opportunities Commission is a good start for something that's going to impact people citywide.
The idea would require buy-in from the Republican-led legislature. According to city attorney Mike Haas, that's because Wisconsin law does not allow cities to implement their own sales tax without approval from state lawmakers.
It's a matter of, you know, requesting that the legislature introduce a bill and somebody sponsor a bill to give the city authority to impose a sales tax.
There is some precedent for a local sales tax in the state of Wisconsin, namely the new sales tax in Milwaukee. The state legislature approved it just last year, and it went into effect in January. It's estimated to generate about $193 million in city revenue this year. But according to Finance Director Dave Schmidtke, that approval was due to special circumstances.
They were facing significant budget issues associated with their pension liabilities. They were facing expected large increases in their pension costs that they could not fund without reducing current services pretty dramatically.
Schmidtke also says that while Madison does have budget problems, it has not reached Milwaukee's level of concern. Alder Latimer Burris says she is unwilling to make long-term decisions about the city's budget without asking the right questions. Because of those concerns, the resolution also requests reports from the city's finance department outlining budgets from 2019 to 2024.
We've got to have data to look at and to understand what's happened in the past so we can inform the future.
The state legislature is not currently in session and would likely not give Madison the go-ahead on a local sales tax before the city's next budget. But Alder Latimer Burris says that this resolution is more of a long-term solution, one that's seeking to look further ahead than 2025.
I understand that Madison hasn't always had favor or maybe ever had favor with the legislature, but I think it's something that we have to start petitioning and having discussions about and lobby for. I know that we have a lobbyist, and I think that we can support different options for this crisis or this impediment that's going to last for, you know, a decade.
The resolution to lobby the state legislature for a local sales tax is on tonight's agenda. It would still need to go through several committees before the council can make an official request to state lawmakers. The Common Council is set to meet tonight at 6:30 to consider other fiscal options for the city as the budget process starts up, after Mayor Rhodes Conway's ask last month for alders to pick a direction. Reporting for WORT News, I'm Faye Parks.
If you've recently walked down the campus end of State Street, you might have noticed a giant inflatable rat towering over you above the site of an ongoing city development. Behind Scabby the Rat is an ongoing protest against unfair labor practices by a non-union subcontractor. WORT reporter Lila Grubb has more.
Scabby the Rat has been at all sorts of protesting or striking trade unions to oppose non-union contractors and unfair labor practices. And as numerous WORT tipsters report, he's popped up the last 2 months at 415 North Lake Street, the site of a city project to build a new BRT bus station and erect more student housing. It's the work of the International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 139. They're protesting what they say are unfair wages paid by H.M. Brandt, the demolition subcontractor in Phase 1 of the project. Mike Irvin is the organizing director of Operating Engineers, Local 139. He's been picketing on Lake Street since early February. He's there, he says, because H.M. Brandt, a non-union demolition company, isn't providing the industry standard in wages or benefits.
And do you guys see an end in sight? Do you...
Not at the moment, but we're going to be here until they pay them.
He says a standard package for dangerous work like demolition would pay $43.23 an hour plus employee benefits. Irvin says H.M. Brandt isn't paying close to that, adding that workers are making anywhere from $25 to $32 an hour. Some aren't earning benefits for working a dangerous job.
How is it dangerous? They're tearing down a building that they're sitting right next to and right underneath. So at any time, any of that structure could come down on them. I mean, that's the simplest thing to think of. But you also have the fact that there's a lot of airborne particles from the concrete, silica, that could provoke silicosis. But if they do it too much and they're not maintaining dust control, they could inhale that and down the road eventually find themselves having cancer from the silicosis.
H.M. Brandt, the demolition company, did not return a request for comment. How did the city of Madison come into contract with a non-union demolition company? A city official tells WORT that the contract for Phase 1 of the project to redevelop the State Street campus parking facility was awarded to Stevens Construction, which came in significantly under the city's budget. And under state law, the city is required to go with the lowest bidder for these projects. Stevens Construction then hired H.M. Brandt as a subcontractor for demolition work, and that subcontracting work was signed off by the Board of Public Works. A groundbreaking for the redevelopment project is tentatively scheduled for later this month, meaning city officials may have to cross non-union lines come groundbreaking. Phase 2 of the redevelopment project will build more student housing. That deal is with the Minneapolis-based Mortenson Development, a union company. Notably, the development deal would add 248 apartments and reach up to 16 stories, involving a deal with the city for millions to use its air rights. The entire project, both the bus station and student housing, is dated to be wrapped sometime in 2026. Irvin, of the Operating Engineers, says he'll be out there with Scabby the Rat until the demolition is finished, or H.M. Brandt comes to the table to negotiate, whichever comes first. In the meantime, he says, the support from community members and students passing by has been outstanding, providing food to the union and honking their horns.
And that's encouraging to see that the younger generations understand how important fighting for those workers' rights, wages, and benefits are.
Reporting for WORT News, I'm Lila Grubb.
It's now 6:24 p.m. and you're listening to the live local news on WORT. We turn now to two special guests in the studio, Jess Miller and Jay DeSiri Ramos, who want to tell you a little something about the WORT Winter Pledge Drive.
That is right. We do want to tell you about the Pledge Drive. We are in the second week, the Tuesday of the second week, and we are looking for you to call and donate. I know that you've been sitting on your hands waiting to donate, feeling like it's not, we don't really need you, but we do really need you, don't we, Jess?
Absolutely. And to be totally honest, I would donate just now that I know what that big rat, inflatable rat was on State Street. I've been wondering about that since I first saw it. And really, that's the kind of off-the-beaten-path local news that you get with a community-supported radio station like WORT. But that community supported is not just a word. It really does take a village of people, not just to run this place, not just to keep the lights on and report the news, but you listeners out there, your listening is wonderful and we sincerely appreciate it. But if you really want to help out, you can call or go online. The number to call to make a pledge is 608-256-2001. Or you can go online to wortfm.org and click on the orange donate button in the top right corner. You can make a one-time pledge, or you can set it up to just donate a little bit every month, spread it out over the course of the year, just like you've got your Netflix subscription and your Hulu subscription. Just go on and add a Wort subscription and take a little bit of the stress off of worrying about what radio station you're going to listen to.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I think, you know, often you're paying for things that you don't remember that you're paying for or that you don't even really use, right? But if you're tuning in right now, you are using your Wort subscription that you're not even paying for yet. So, you know, give us a call or go online and make that a part of your donation to WORT. The other thing that, you know, a lot of times when you choose to buy something, let's say you want to buy a couch or something and you're going to spread it across over, you know, four payments, it ends up costing you more. But here, if you are trying to get something like the sweatshirt, it actually costs you less if you do it over, you know, the course of a year. So I think I forget what word, maybe it's the $9 level a month is what gets you the sweatshirt. But if you go online or talk to our phone answer, they'll be able to talk you through that. And that's just one of the really great things about WORT and becoming sort of a partner with us in this work monthly.
Yeah, and that sweatshirt Jade was talking about, that is branded for the theme of this year's pledge drive, which is Another Weirdo for Wort. We know that our listeners are not the kind of people who are into the commercial radio, top of the pops, top 40 kind of people. They like weird music, weird news, weird talk shows. And if you want to show off that pride, as Jade was saying, you can make a pledge and get the sweatshirt with a cartoon design by the illustrious P.S. Mueller. It has some really wacky, weird Wort characters on the front and says Another Weirdo for Wort, so you can get that and show off your Wort pride.
It's also, you know, just available during this pledge drive. It wasn't available last year when we did our birthday boost. It won't be available next time. So this is really the time to do it. And we're coming, you know, we have Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, but that's the only time that you can make your donation count for the news. So do it right now. I know you're going to be busy tomorrow. You've got dinner plans. So call right now, 608-256-2001, or go online to wortfm.org.
We're looking for just a couple more people to donate here during our news program. You've got only 30 minutes left in this hour. You could make a difference in the running of this station in just 15 minutes by giving us a call or going online. One more time, the number to call there is 608-256-2001 to speak to someone at the station, or go online at wortfm.org. And now we'll go back to the local news.
The time is now 6:32, and you're listening to the local news on WORT 89.9 FM, Madison. I'm Sean Bull, here with my co-host, John K. Wilson. Thanks for joining us.
Madison's Greenbush neighborhood on the Near West Side has a long history of redevelopment and change. One such redevelopment in the 60s nearly erased the Black, Jewish, and Italian communities that had settled in the area. Now, community leaders and stakeholders are looking to change the face of Regent Street once again, but they say this time they're striving to respect Greenbush's history while they do it. Last week, Tyler Katzenberger, a freelance reporter for the Cap Times, published an article on Greenbush's past and future. He gave WORT news producer Faye Parks the rundown earlier today.
Thank you for joining me, Tyler.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So, the Greenbush neighborhood has a long and complicated history of transformation. But before we get into that, things are still changing as we speak. The Regent Street Group is looking to revitalize the neighborhood. Can you share some background on that group and their main goals?
For those who don't know, this group is a collection of local leaders, including folks that are part of local neighborhood associations, business owners, and city officials and developers. And the whole idea is to bring private and public and nonprofit groups together to plan out the neighborhood's future. What they're doing together is trying to figure out, okay, what do we need for housing? What do we need for infrastructure? What type of business development do we need on the street? And then to the best of their ability, trying to plan that out with a cohesive vision going forward, while also trying to keep equity at the forefront of redevelopment.
Why do they say those changes and developments are necessary right now?
So Regent Street sits in this really weird spot. It's got UW-Madison right to its north. It's got a hospital on kind of its east end anchoring it, Meritor. And then it's also got Camp Randall Stadium on the west end. And it's also such a vital thoroughfare in the city because obviously the isthmus is only so wide and it's one of the few roads that kind of spans through the city. And so for local leaders, the problem is how do you address all of these competing issues while also dealing with a street that has some lower density buildings and also has some aging infrastructure. And so as the city's population continues to boom, if I remember right, Madison has some of the highest growing rents in the entire nation in terms of percentage. These leaders are trying to figure out how do we house people on this street? How do we create an active business ecosystem, both for visitors coming to Camp Randall Stadium, but also workers who are employed at Meritor and also students who go to school at UW-Madison. Students especially are seeing a big housing crunch. There are lots of luxury units going up on State Street and also near like Johnson and Gorham Streets, which are traditional student neighborhoods. But for students who can't afford those luxury buildings, a lot of them are coming to the Regent Street area to try to find more affordable housing. And so that creates another problem of we need to build housing, but also the folks that are here need affordable housing. How do we manage that considering that Madison is growing so fast? And so it's a really tough needle for these folks to thread, but you know, it sounds like they have some solutions that they're working on. And part of that is doing collaborative development.
So from your article, you called it the Regent Street Renaissance. It sounds like there are some projects that are already in the process, already on the docket. Can you point to some of those?
There are projects going on. The first one that comes to mind for me is called Chapter. Anybody who's driven on Park Street or Regent Street is going to know it. It's this tower on the corner of Park and Regent that's bringing a bunch of new housing to the area. And what's actually in it is this mural about the Greenbush neighborhood. They've been working with the Italian Workmen's Club, some folks from there, as well as the Campus Area Neighborhood Association, to make sure that the building honors the neighborhood's history. There are also some other housing projects going up. One is going up at the corner of Orchard and Regent Streets. That project is a five-story development from the Wisconsin Housing Preservation Corporation. And then there's also a new project coming where the neighborhood house is right now. And so the neighbor house is a community center that's been in the Greenbush area for over a century. And so right now it's this existing one-story community center. They're working on a new six-story building that's going to have a new community space, but also some affordable housing units above the space. So it was kind of framed as a way to serve a wider community and kind of to alleviate some space issues at the neighborhood house while also providing more housing.
So we've kind of already touched on this, but I'd love to hear more about Greenbush's history. So folks who remember past redevelopments are pretty wary of this new endeavor. Can you walk us through their concerns based on that past experience?
So for those who didn't know, and I didn't know much before writing the story, the Greenbush neighborhood, especially where the triangle is right now, kind of bounded by Park, Regent, and Washington, that used to be a very vibrant neighborhood. It was one of the city's most diverse neighborhoods in terms of culture and ethnicity. And it also had really strong Italian roots, as well as Jewish and Black roots. But that neighborhood, for a long time, was really characterized as a slum, and it was kind of the subject of a lot of housing discrimination and racism. And then in the 1950s and the 1960s, especially, you saw urban renewal programs come in and basically take a look at the neighborhood and, you know, be like, this is blight. We need to clear it out for more redevelopment. But for the folks who were there, you know, the response was, well, this isn't blight. This is where we live. This is where we have our homes. This is where we have our restaurants. But regardless, the neighborhood was pretty much completely bulldozed with a few exceptions. And now today, if you go there, you can see some townhomes there. That's where Bayview is. And also some Community Development Authority housing. But these folks are now looking at new redevelopments and saying, okay, we hear maybe that it's supposed to be more equitable or more inclusive, but we were there, or our parents or grandparents were there when this neighborhood got cleared out over a half century ago. You know, we're kind of worried that that's going to happen again. And it already feels so different for these folks. A high-rise tower is a lot different than what used to be in the neighborhood when they were growing up, which is just houses, like single, double-story houses, maybe some three- or four-story buildings. So it's just a big change for a lot of folks. And so some people are very worried about it. It's also important to note that there are some students, especially in younger folks, who are saying, well, we need this change because we need a place to live that isn't going to, you know, break our wallets, if that makes sense. So there is that little bit of tension that's happening.
So the Regent Street Group has pointed to the Bayview Foundation with their work located less than a mile away as a model for their plans to be more conscious of history and of culture. What aspects of that project do they say they'll emulate moving forward?
Yeah, so the big one is design justice, which is this redevelopment model that emphasizes using collaborative practices to center traditionally marginalized people in development. So the idea is to go out and have community conversations, to talk with the people living in a neighborhood and get an idea of what resources they need to build a strong community. And so Jason Ilstrup, who is part of Downtown Madison, Inc., basically he described it as we didn't invent the playbook. So he did point to the Bayview Project, which was able to do this by replacing its aging townhomes with some new apartment buildings and townhomes that are still affordable and still serving mostly the same residents, you know, without fully gentrifying the housing. I think that's a concern a lot of folks have sometimes is, oh, I have this affordable housing and maybe it's not the greatest, but this new apartment building, I'm not going to be able to afford. Like, is that building a community for me? And so what the Bayview Foundation set out to do is make a community that, yes, it's not going to be a piece of gentrification. This is designed to serve our neighborhood. And so that's kind of the philosophy that a lot of these folks are trying to walk into with the rest of Regent Street. Is how do we create a built environment that serves the neighborhood and the people in the community that are here and allows new residents to come in and be a part of this, but without forcing people out or driving people out.
So is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners, maybe ways for folks to stay engaged with this redevelopment moving forward?
I think the biggest thing I'll share is that reporting this story, it was insane, I think, just how vivid a lot of these descriptions of culture and community were and how important a lot of cultural heritage is to folks who grew up in the neighborhood and still are there today. And you can see it informing, I think, some businesses along the street. So for anybody who's been to Fabiola's since they opened late last year, I wrote about this in my lead, but they tried to emulate this vibe of a classic red sauce pasta house, which there used to be a lot of those in the Greenbush neighborhood, especially on that corner of Park and Regent Streets that was called Spaghetti Corners at one point. And same with Butterbird. When they were remodeling their new building, they were thinking about ways to keep like the classic kind of more industrial parts of the building because it used to be a widget factory. They thought about, well, how can we keep a lot of that character in and integrate it into our design? So the restaurants and businesses that are coming here are really thinking about how do we emphasize this culture? And you can see it in the mural at Chapter 2. Folks are trying to be more aware and more cognizant of what came before them and let it guide what happens in the future. And yeah, I think that's just a powerful story.
Thank you again for agreeing to speak with me, Tyler.
Yeah, thanks so much, Faye. It's been great.
That was Tyler Katzenberger, a freelance reporter with the Cap Times. Last week, he published an article that outlines the Greenbush neighborhood's transformation over the last century, and Greenbush is still changing. Though this time, the developers say they're trying to foster existing communities instead of pricing them out.
We're going to check in now with Jess Miller and Jade Isiri Ramos to hear the news from the Pledge Drive.
And welcome back to WORT's Winter Pledge Drive. And I think since the last time we've talked to you, Jade, we've had some good news.
Yeah, we do have good news. Should we ring the button? Nah, there we go. It's not really. Ring the bell. That's what it is. We had Maddie, who went online and pledged for the very first time. So we have a new donor. Thank you, Maddie. If you want to be like Maddie, you can go online. That's WORTFM.org and make a donation or call us 608-256-2001.
Yes, thank you very much, Maddie, and welcome to the Wart family.
Yeah, I think actually after you donate, it changes the pledge drive for you. I think that, once you've made your donation, you feel a part of this, right? You're hearing people talk about supporting the station and you know that your dollars are doing all of the things that they said or they are saying that you can do.
And you yourself can become a part of this family if you call or go online. We're still looking for a couple more folks to donate here during the news show. Only about 15 minutes left in the hour here. You can go online or give us a call and really make a difference in the running of this really wonderful community-supported radio station here just in 15 minutes of your time.
Yeah, I really want to also take time right now as we're thanking Maddie to also thank the people who are here today. So Michelle is answering phones and has been answering phones for the last couple of hours. And then we also got food from Lao Lan Zhang, who they provided a really awesome yellow curry that we have in the back right now.
Yes, sincerely from the bottom of our hearts, thank you very much for the food. It really makes a difference.
It takes all you know, everyone involved in this to make it happen, right? The people who feed us, the folks who are answering the phones, and of course, you who are donating and helping us reach our financial goals so that we can continue to operate here at WORT.
Yeah, and while we are supported by many, many volunteers, and we try to save money where we can, buying used equipment and only really spending money on repairs to our building when absolutely necessary, our expenses still run about $850,000 a year. That money is going to the salaries of the full-time employees that we have here. 7 full-time staff members are training all of our volunteers. It also goes to keeping our equipment in order, keeping our financial accounts in order. But it would really cost a lot more if we had on-air hosts, if we paid on-air hosts. So really, every dollar you donate counts, and every dollar you donate makes a difference in the running of this station.
And every dollar that you give really stretches. We stretch your dollars really far here. And it's a labor of love. Everyone who is involved on getting the shows on the air, the voices that you're hearing, the people who are working behind the scenes, they love WORT, and this is something that they find value. Therefore, they're giving their time weekly or biweekly, sometimes monthly, depending on the volunteer. But they count on you to make donations during pledge drives so that they have a place to come and donate their time.
So again, there's only about 15 more minutes in our local news show here. If you want to support handcrafted local news, you can give us a call at 608-256-2001 or go online at WORTFM.org. There's a big orange donate button in the top right corner of the website. Michelle is here in the studio eagerly waiting to take your calls over the phone. We'll be happy to give you a shout out like we did Maddie and say a little message for you here on the station. Tell us what your favorite shows are. We want to hear from you. We want to know what you're listening to and what you love about WORT, what makes you a weirdo for WORT. The number is 608-256-2001. And now back to the local news.
On this edition of Wildlife Weekly, feature contributor Jackie Sandberg tells us all about a lesser-known type of waterfowl, the greater white-fronted goose.
Welcome to Wildlife Weekly. My name is Jackie Sandberg, and I'm the Wildlife Program Manager for the Dane County Humane Society here in Madison, Wisconsin. Each week, we choose a topic related to wildlife rehabilitation or the environment, and today I'm going to talk about the greater white-fronted goose. And that's because, believe it or not, we admitted one to our wildlife center just a couple of weeks ago, and I was amazed. I was shocked, actually. It was one of those situations where typically someone calls the wildlife center and says, "Hey, I found a goose." And what do most people think? "Oh, I found a Canada goose." And I didn't actually ask for a photo or anything in this case. Sometimes as we get older in rehabilitation after decades of work, you start to kind of take those little things for granted. So at the time I said, you have a goose. And the finder said, "You know, I've already got it contained and I can bring it to you right now." And I said, "Sure, that sounds great." And so when the person arrived, to my complete shock and utter bewilderment, another one of our staff members radioed and said, "Jackie, I don't think this is a Canada goose. Is it a domestic goose?" And I laughed a little bit. So for those that aren't familiar, the greater white-fronted goose is a species that we actually do see here in our area, and they do migrate through, although their numbers are much less than they used to be historically. So before I start talking about them, I would like to point out that the Badgerland Birding Alliance, or what formerly was the Madison Audubon, really put out a great article about greater white-fronted geese in 2020 that has some really amazing facts. And so I really encourage folks to read that because it does have some historical journal entries and data points that have been collected in the state of Wisconsin about this goose. And I think it's just really fascinating to kind of read the historical notations. So they used to be very, very big here, like flocks unseen, huge numbers in the 1890s. But now we're down to a few stragglers that come through, mostly just in groups with other Canada geese. And I shouldn't say stragglers necessarily, but this one in particular was kind of alone by itself with other Canada geese. So it does happen that sometimes you just see one, sometimes you'll see a whole flock come over, and they are quite social and they do live in family groups. So The greater white funnel goose is called the speckle belly, commonly, and that's because on the belly band, they have brown speckles over their white underbody. Otherwise, they're a very small-ish kind of brown, dainty goose, and they have a bright orange bill with a white face, meaning that from the orange bill and up towards the top of the head, you've got this nice white face patch, sometimes yellowish, depending on how old the bird is. And then the entire head and body is pretty much brown, and then you get down to the white belly with the speckles and then nice orange legs. So they are just a really cool, unique goose. And the one that we admitted is a very small goose. So we believe that it's a female. It's actually really, really tiny. So we were looking up some charts, and actually the smallest ones that fit the weight range are a certain subspecies of greater white-fronted goose that is a very tiny female. But typically you may see usually reverse sexual dimorphism in a lot of our bird species where females are larger. In this particular case, seems like a small female. So the greater white-fronted goose does come through on migration through Wisconsin. Typically, they're going to be breeding way up north. So talking about Alaska and northern Canada, really kind of an Arctic bird, honestly. And they are really interested in grass species for their food. So like sedges, grasses, any plant vegetation, agricultural crops, rice is probably their favorite. So they've actually changed their migration patterns just based on where rice fields have been located in the U.S. historically. So where it used to be Texas, now it's kind of moved more east. And so that is a reason that people think that maybe greater white-fronted geese have kind of changed their patterns, maybe coming back through Wisconsin more often, because they're going to migrate through the continental U.S., mostly through the Midwest, although there's some populations on the West Coast, and then they're going to go down into Mexico and to some of the southern United States for their wintering grounds. So they love to eat lots of different things. This is an interesting goose to have in care because we have to find a whole bunch of different types of food and styles of food to feed. So it's different than a Canadian goose who you just kind of say, oh, here's some greens and here's some general, you know, seeds and oats. This bird has all sorts of different types of feeding platforms and like trays in its enclosure right now. So it has a variety of things to choose from because they'll eat barley and oats and corn and rice and wheat and everything else. So kind of an amazing, almost forager that will kind of eat any of the plant material. So kind of generalist, but not really. Like they have their favorites. So very interesting type of goose. Fun facts about the greater white-fronted goose are that they actually don't breed until they're about 2 to 3 years old. So different than our Canada geese, these babies, when they're born, actually return right back to their same site, their natal site, and help their parents defend the nesting area. And they don't breed. They just help. And I think that that's really cool. It's different than most of your other species, especially when we're thinking about waterfowl. You just think about them, you know, being an adult the next year and going on and breeding. But nope, they come back, they help their parents, and that might continue for a couple of years until they finally disperse. And I thought that was probably the most interesting fact that I've heard about that particular species. Otherwise, they also will stay in a very strong V formation when they're flying over. So if you're looking and you have a really nice strong pair of binoculars or a scope and you can see that speckled belly, that really helps to kind of identify them. But they also just really stay in a very strict kind of geometric formation like that. And then in addition, they do have, you know, a typical sound that's going to be different than the Canadian goose, which I won't play here, but you can definitely listen to those sounds on the allaboutbirds.org website if you're interested, or check out Merlin if you don't have that app on your phone. Really highly recommend that so that you can kind of learn your birds in species that are in our area in Wisconsin. So we do see them, and now is the time you might see them, especially as waterfowl are migrating through in the spring and then again in the fall. And this one in particular was found in a very kind of busy area near a known waterfowl site, has a keel fracture and is recovering, but so far doing well in care. So you never know what you're going to find. That's the beauty of wildlife rehabilitation, is that you should expect the unexpected and also just appreciate that there are a lot of different species out there, and every one of them is just a little unique and a little bit different. So we're glad to be able to get the research from different organizations like All About Birds, the Cornell website, Birds of North America, Audubon, all the folks that have done research to pull together about these species helps rehabilitators to give them the best care possible when they come in. And it's the species you don't work with very often. So be on the lookout for sick and injured wildlife here in Wisconsin. If you have any questions about them or you find an animal, give us a call at 608-287-3235. Thanks for listening here on WORT. This has been Wildlife Weekly. Yeah, oh.
We've come nearly to the end of another hour of handcrafted local news here on WORT. Our guests this evening, Jess Miller and Jade Asiri Ramos, have one last word this evening and hopefully some people to thank. What's the news, Jade and Jess?
Yes, you're listening to the local news and welcome back to WORT's Winter Pledge Drive. That last story got me thinking about something. Jade, you know how sometimes when you see a group of geese flying in a V formation, there's one side that's longer than the other. Do you know why that is?
I have no idea.
More geese.
Okay. See, here on WORT, you learn facts about geese and then you get good geese jokes as well.
I do have to give credit where credit is due to our engineer, Dave, here. He told us that joke and had to share it with you listeners out there. It's just one of the many wonderful things that makes you a weirdo for WORT. That is the theme of our Winter Pledge Drive here, another weirdo for WORT. And if you consider yourself another weirdo for WORT, then give us a call or go online and make a donation. The number to call is 608-256-2001. Or you can visit our website, wortfm.org, and make your donation there. I know we've only got about 5 minutes left in the new show here, but if you've listened this long, then it surely means you are a diehard WORT fan and you are looking for ways to support your community-supported radio station, so you can give us a call here and make a pledge in the next 5 minutes or so. We'd really appreciate it.
Yeah, we really would. And we need two of you to go online or call and help us reach our goal. It'd be really nice to reach it, and so that all the folks who are behind the Tuesday news show, they feel that support from their community, right? We have Wildlife Weekly, which has been on the news program on Tuesdays as long as I've listened to the news here at WORT. We have Faye, who works really hard every day. We've got Sean and John, who working hard with reading the news to you, getting all the right pronunciations, bringing it to you in their wonderful voices. And of course, we've got Dave with his dad joke. So, you know, this is the team behind the Tuesday new show, and by donating during the show, you're sort of tipping them, right? You're sort of saying like, I appreciate what you do and I'm going to put my dollars behind you. So 608-256-2001, or go online to make a donation quickly so that we can thank you while we're still on air.
Yes, that's right. It really does take a village. I know if you're just listening in your car or on your radio at home while you're cooking dinner, it can seem like magic how this news program comes together every night. But we've got folks in here, dozens, hundreds of folks in here every day who are helping to put this news show together. And they would really appreciate a show of your support. Once again, the number to call is 608-256-2001. Or you can go online to wortfm.org to make your donation. You can also select from a number of enticing incentives, little badges of honor to show off your pride in WORT. You've got patches, hats, special sweatshirts that you can only get during this pledge drive. And you've got just a few more minutes in this hour to call or go online. Again, one more time, the number to call is 608-256-2001. Or you can visit our website, wortfm.org. We hope you will stick around and continue listening to the rest of the daily news, and you can stick around and listen to the rest of WORT's programming all night.
Keep those calls coming at 608-256-2001. You can also donate online, of course, at wortfm.org/donate. Thanks for supporting the WORT live local news at 6 p.m. Your headline writer was John K. Wilson, your reporter was Lila Grubb, and your feature contributor was Jackie Sandberg. Engineer Dave Lawrenson got the news on the air, Faye Parks produced this newscast, and Sholly Pittman is the news director at WORT. I'm your host, Sean Bull.
And I'm your host, John K. Wilson. Thank you to all of you out there who called in with your pledge of support this hour. You really make it happen. Up next is Spanish language news within Nuestro Patio. Good night.